Hey, hey, y'all. Welcome to Traveler's Guide to Venus and Mars with Princess Robin. If you've ever wondered how relationships are approached from another perspective, this is your relationship roadmap. We are still talking about lasting love with Keoki and Sharon, a couple whose relationship has stood the test of time and trials, and I just couldn't let them go. They've agreed to hang out a little bit longer. Thanks for hanging with me, y'all. So for the newbies, the ground rules are as follows. There are no right or wrong answers. Debate is welcome. Keep it clean. Keep it real. But most importantly, we're having fun up in here. So go on, y'all have another toast on your behalf. Clink your neighbor. And let's kick it off. So if y'all missed the first part of this conversation of lasting love with Keoki and Sharon, you need to go back and listen. They have an amazing love story. Even just how they met and came together was so entertaining, so heartwarming. So please go back and listen. But the last question that we left off with was in their 20 years together, 20 plus years, actually, I don't know. Oh, and they're kids. Kissing now. If you're listening to this on audio, you can't see, but they just gave each other some loving smooches. I adore it. It's so cute. But anyway, the last question I asked about their 20 plus years together was, what was their greatest triumph? And Sharon had an opportunity to give us her perspective. And I had to cut my boy Keoki off. And so I want to turn the mic over to him. Keoki, what's the greatest triumph, in your opinion, in your years with Sharon?
Without a doubt, the fact that we've been together for 20 years. In Seattle, we are, and with a lot of my friends, we're definitely considered like an institution of marriage. Like, we are a symbol of that. And nobody thought that this would last, being the first, one of the first, like, internet marriages, the first internet dating. It wasn't even a thing back then. Like, people were saying, well, how do you know he's not like a serial murderer? You know, he lives up at the house next to Gary Ridgway. And
we got our serial killers up in Seattle. So, clink your neighbor on that, Ted, you know.
Bundy, like, he could be the Filipino Ted Bundy, you know. And so there was a lot of doubts. And certainly there was a lot of doubts in us as well, even in the midst of our relationship. We suffered a lot of tough times and challenges, just like any other relationship. But we've been able to weather that storm. And, you know, with the history of, like, I don't know who my father was. I never met my father. My wife, she was raised by her grandfather. So even the institution of marriage for the both of us was never something that we were, like, taught. Or we even got mentored in by our parents. And so I just knew how to be a better father because my father wasn't available to me. So the best thing that he could do for me was not to be in my life so I could learn how to be a better father. Mm. And so that 20 years that we've been together, plus I have friends that have been married and, you know, are divorced and into a second or even some a third marriage. And the fact that we're here.
And we're not judging them, Keoki.
Those who are
in their third marriage. Sometimes the third time is a charm.
It's a charm, right? Like, I'm not judging.
I'm just messing with you. It's all good.
No, I know. It's just more so like just more, I think it's just a statement about us.
Yeah.
Like, what we've been able to fundamentally do for each other, even though we've struggled. Like, we've suffered a separation and a year separation, and not only because, I mean, actually two separations. So we had a separation where we were trying to figure out a relationship, and then another separation where she had to go take care of her grandfather. And that wasn't because we needed to separate. That was more so she needed to do that for her grandfather to take care of him. And mm-hmm. So that was 2 years that we haven't been together in our 20 year relationship.
And to be honest with you, there was a point where we were 2 weeks away from divorce.
Yeah.
So, you know, let's unpack that a little bit, because that is quite a triumph. I'm someday going to hopefully be able to talk to more people about this, but I don't know too many people who will talk about that moment in their relationship. You know, more people I know, we're on the other side of it, the divorce that actually did happen. But mm-hmm. y'all made it through that. How did you do it? Well, tell me a little bit about that if you're comfortable sharing.
Well, I was the one who filed because I was over it. Like, I was just clearly just...
I gave you the paperwork, remember?
No, but you didn't fill it out.
I did fill it out. Anyway.
And we're coming up on potential separation number three.
So it was like this pump fake, right? And I was just like, all right, you want to pump fake me? I'm like, no, we've been really getting in, right? We had just kind of gotten to that point. Like, it was just getting really real. Like, when there's like, you got to come up with a parenting plan. And where's this kid going to be on Friday? How are the expenses and everything going to be laid out? And like, for me, I mean, I was really done. But then there was a part of me that was like, this was really it. We'd gotten so caught up on just the title of husband and wife. Right, like, I'm the man and you're the woman. I go to work. I want to come home. I want to have the house clean. I want to have food. Like,
Kyogi's getting a side eye from Princess Robin right now.
And the same thing, which we haven't really said, is that he's 5 years older than me. You know,
got a PYT there.
So there's a huge age difference, and I think he kind of came, he ended up coming over, and then we ended up having like a heart to heart. And I was just like, I could see it in his eyes that he didn't want this, right? And then this is really when things really changed for me, was when he said, you know, if this is what you need to move on, I'm willing to give it to you, even though it's not what I want. And it was like this light went off, and it was like, whoa, this is what unconditional love is, you know? And I think that's what I struggled with, you know, was unconditional love. My mom was 14 when she got pregnant with me. She was 15 when she had me. She and my dad had never had a relationship. I mean, I had a big sister and she was married. My grandfather had been married. So for me, I mean, I had the symbol of what marriage was, right? Mm-hmm. But there was always this chaos and all this other stuff that was surrounding around it. So when he literally said, you know, if this is what you need to move forward, I'm willing to give that to you, even though that it hurts me. I was like, yo, that's unconditional love, you know? And that, I think that was a lesson that I needed to learn, right? Because like I told him from the jump, no, my love is conditional.
Like we said, keep it real.
Right.
Look, I got conditions, bruh.
I do. You know? Chick, I've been having my own, you know, and I've had to do for self, you know.
Yeah.
So when it was that 2 weeks, and he said that, I was like, you know, I'm done with it. So I went to see the attorney. We called it off, and that was in 2010, you know. And it was just something about being married for 7, 8, 9, and 10. Like, those were like, I would say that those were really the tougher years for us, with 7, 8, 9, and 10. But then the light bulb went off and it was like, this is beyond love. This is not surface level. This is not surface level. This is not just him saying he loves you. He's willing to let you go, you know?
Yeah.
And it was, and so, yeah, I mean, and even from then, like, we've never been to counseling. It's always been something that I've asked for and something that I've always wanted, because I felt like there needed to be some kind of mediation. But our therapy and our counseling really happens in the bedroom, where we are really honest and open with each other. And it's like, tell me how you feel.
It's not the champagne room.
I was going to say, in the bedroom, bedroom, a bedroom, baby. That's really, you know, I'm oddly moved because I have very few feelings. That just made me, that just, you know, really moved me to hear that that was kind of that turning point and how strong.
It was my friend, right? Like, it was like we got caught up in these titles and these roles and you're working and I'm working. And then at the time it was like, I was like 5 years into diversity, equity, and this whole race work, you know? And then he was kind of getting started. So it was like, what I had to realize is like my frustrations was not necessarily with him, but how the world was treating Black people, you know? Like, and it was really that. And so it opened up so much communication between the both of us, and I'm happy that I've been able to kind of put that torch down and move into another area, and this is where his takeoff is, you know?
Yeah.
And I'll clarify, like, I mean, before people think that I'm very patriarchal and misogynistic, you know, the thing is that, so I was working at UW and
University of Washington,
and Sharon was she had stopped work or she was laid off. She was in between jobs, and so just coming home from work, and sometimes, you know, like I there was a time when I was out of work between after I finished college and then going to work, and I was always made sure to put food on, tried to make sure that food was on the table, tried to make sure that the house was clean. All these things when Sharon came home from the Urban League. And, you know, I'm always big on reciprocal love, right? Like what I do for you, you do for me. And we both have do that for each other, but then we also fail in that for each other. And so as we are challenged with just the, like I said, like the anti-Blackness in my family and the challenges that Sharon was having with her family, with her mother and her father, and you know, all these things were bleeding over into each other, and inevitably, unfortunately, we started taking that out on each other, and so we became our own worst enemies as we were trying to figure out, well, how do we define love for each other?
Yeah.
And in that, we felt that the other wasn't giving enough, and so I don't want it to seem like, you know, I expected like her to be barefoot and pregnant in the kitchen making dinner for me. That's not what it was. Yeah.
Because if it was Kiyoki, I'd have to come and punch you in the eye, and I don't want to have to do that.
You've seen me in the past. Like, I love to cook, so the kitchen is my domain. And yes. Sharon is always like, you know, I know I can. You know, I can cook too. You know, I know how to cook, and I was like, well, I don't want you to cook because I love to cook, and like we have two separate knives. Like, I have my own knife set, and then she's rolling her eyes. And then there's a knife set for the family because, you know, she doesn't, you know, I mean, she
I'm
doesn't
like, just cook. Like,
I mean, so I'm very,
he's all bougie about it, Sharon.
So,
but he is pretty good. I have to say,
he is. And that's what I had to learn. I had to learn those things. Like, there's just, like, he's not a cheap person at all, you know, and that he wants quality. And that's what I, you know, I learned those things through him, you know, was like, okay, maybe I can have an appreciation for some knives. Maybe I can be.
Yeah, we went from Applebee's to dinner over at Morton's Steakhouse, right? Like, she was like, fine dining was Applebee's.
It's a step up from McDonald's, dude.
You are alive. He make it. You see how
I know.
He make it sound like I'm brand new. Like,
I don't know no better.
I ain't never had no good knives or nothing in my whole existence until I met him.
He ain't right.
We're not right.
We're gonna give him a second to adjust his attitude, and while he does that, if you're just joining us. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Traveler's Guide to Venus and Mars with Princess Robin, and we're talking about We're talking about lasting love. This is actually part two of our conversation with Keoki and Sharon. And Keoki is about to get killed on the air. So
I'm the full darkness.
You're too much. Okay, so I want to shift gears just a little bit. And thank you for being so open about that challenge that and that triumph. That is a huge triumph and inspiration for a lot of us who are going through things and, you know, trying to get over that hump and figuring out how to, what's on the other side of it. So I want to ask a little bit more, though. You've talked, both of you have spoken a little bit about your passion, your work in the community and around diversity and equity and, you know, social justice. And I've known that about both of you for a long time. I am curious to know, like, what role has that played in your relationship as a couple and as parents raising children? What is that like in your lives?
So Sharon knows that the way to get my attention, and she says this all the time, that's why she's laughing, is that the way to get my attention is just by saying diversity.
Diversity!
So can we clean out the refrigerator now? Like, that's just my word. I gotta go, diversity! And he's like, yeah. Like, can we clean out the refrigerator now?
I've become like a groundhog sticking his head out of the hole and seeing what's going on. So
diversity.
Sorry. But
good to know.
I think
code word.
I think that because of the work that I put into my undergraduate degree with American Ethnic Studies, and there was it was an awakening call, like really finding out about who I am, what I believe in, and I certainly struggle with my own assimilationist challenges and challenges with hating what I saw in the mirror because I was the only Asian in my high school and growing up in a working class town and being called chink and called the N-word and all these other things and experiencing racism here in Seattle as well. Like it really just kind of architected like my foundation of learning who I am, that mm-hmm. my identity wasn't constructed by me, but it's constructed without me, outside of me, and being very angry. So I became very anti-white for a really long time in my undergraduate years, being very like hating, you know, just people, just, I mean, not, I wouldn't say hate, but I just really not only just fear, but just being very angry, right? And then I had to really come to, and that was more so an internal challenge that I had to deal with and finding some resolve in that, learning that not every snake is poisonous, right? Mm. And so finding out that there are a lot of allies in whiteness as well as poisonous snakes in people of color. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, there's anti-blackness in the black community as well. There's anti-blackness in the Latino community. There's anti-black. I mean, that is the how the world or how the U.S. was constructed was in anti-blackness and anti-colorism, but more so anti-blackness because of slavery. And so I knew because of that and because of the way my wife was treated and the way that I just hate seeing people not being treated with fairness as a human being, that I knew that like that just really kind of became a calling. Like, I've gotten myself in some really dangerous situations because of protecting people because of racism, protecting people, women who were being attacked. Like, there was a time at a theater where a woman who she had a cane in her hand, she was eating popcorn, and the guy got really mad because it was a paper bag, and it's like, he was like, and he stood up, this white guy, he stood up in the middle of the theater. We were watching 12 Years as a Slave.
12 Years?
Oh, no, not during 12 Years.
Exactly.
And then he stands up. He's like, you are making so much noise. And he grabbed her popcorn and ripped it. And she was a white woman. And he just grabbed her popcorn and ripped it. And there was this popcorn that just cascaded
that
over
hit my face.
Over everybody like raindrops. And I put myself between her and him. And Sharon was like, Kelpie, just sit down. If you don't
there
just
you
sit
go,
down.
Being Captain Save-A-Ho. Come sit down and let's finish watching this movie. Okay, and that's them people business. So let them people handle it. We came to see the movie.
Yeah.
I've jumped into situations that potentially could have brought physical harm to myself. And but it's just I just react. I feel like it's the right thing to do. And that's not the first time went viral for a video for doing the same thing. It's just, I don't know. Some people freeze up like a deer in headlights in those situations. And I just really just react on gut instinct I step in. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is or how I got that way, but that's just something that I do.
And I can say for him, it's like right is right and wrong is wrong, you know? And even being in that situation, I was just like, look, I'm off today. Like, I just can't put on my cape. I came to see the movie, and that's them people business, you know? And they need to work it out among themselves. But it was like, it was just great to have this masculine spirit that stepped in and said, you know what, look, man, no, you go over there. Mm-hmm. And this is a woman. You're not going to get in front of this woman's face and you're not going to disrespect her like that, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was just like, I was just sitting there and I was just like, that's my man.
That's my man. Yeah, I'm going to show you how much I appreciate you. That's right. I came with him. That's awesome. That's awesome. Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing that perspective. You know, so I do want to touch on, I asked, but it kind of, we got sidetracked a little bit in part one. You have two beautiful kids and you did say, you know, like co-parenting or not co-parenting, well, parenting together as a couple, tough, that, you know, the whole rearing children is more than a notion. What has that been like in your 20 years together? What's that? Is that a picture of your son when he was small?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. So I just got shown a picture of their son who is now 19, right? And this was when he was
next month.
That's just crazy. I've had the pleasure of, you know, seeing them, you know, kind of come up through the years. And, you know, I wonder what it's like to do that together. Raise these beautiful babies.
I think thing is, it's like our kids know who they are. They know that they are equally Filipino as they are equally Black, you know, and that's just something that has just, you know, like I've just always talked to my kids about that. And especially being from West Oakland, like this is not something like, you know, being about the people is a real thing, you know? And so for my kids, they have always seen me on the front lines, you know? Yeah. And I have always been like, okay, this is who Huey P. Newton is. This is what West Oakland is about. This is what the culture of Black being in Oakland is, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I can't tell them about what it is to be Filipino, you know? And mm-hmm. I think that there was a time too, like in our marriage and in our relationship. And when he said that, like, you know, in a way, like, can I say it?
Good.
Okay. Where he just felt like, you know, maybe the acculturation was just a little bit too Black, you know, and there wasn't enough of the Filipino part. And I had to really be straight up and say, well, these are the things that I talk about with them. I'm not prohibiting you from talking to them about the culture, you know, like I can't teach them about what that other side is. That's where the moms, that's where the grandmas, that's where the aunties, that's where the uncles, that's where all that kind of comes into it. But day one is, I'm just let you know, if we go to West Oakland, this is what it is, you know. It is poverty, it is struggle, it is, you know, standing up for who you are, you know. And And that just came with my package, you know? And it was just like, hey, if you can't accept that piece or that part of me, then we just cannot be.
Yeah.
So for our kids, you know, we've been more disconnected from Kyoki's side of the family, you know, but they've had their interactions. Mm-hmm. But then they would come back and and now we got to have the talk, or we want to talk about the weekend. And I'm like, I got to get on the phone with Auntie, because these is words that you hadn't been using before you even went over there. So we need to have a dialogue, you know, if we're going to coexist, you know, if we're going to coexist, the one thing that you have to understand is this, is these kids are Black. They are Negro. That's the main thing. Mm-hmm. And if you cannot be accepting of that, then we're just not gonna be around.
And I'll say this, like, there's no buts, there's no ifs about it. Like, the world will just see my son and my daughter as Black.
Yeah.
Period. And that hurts as being a father who is Filipino and who is Asian. But then also seeing like the pain that comes with my family who doesn't like understand some things, like when my aunt sees my daughter and says, well, your hair is a mess. And to me, her hair is beautiful because her hair is curly.
It is beautiful.
And like, no, it's not a mess. It's curly. That's natural. That's the way it's supposed to be. And then I'm like, what you mean? And so those are like some of the challenges when, you know, people who don't really understand like little things like that. So, yes.
Yeah. So much there. I know we're not going to do a part three, but we're going to come back and talk about this another day on another episode. Because actually we are out of time again. This goes way too fast. It just goes to show that there's so much richness in your story. And I really appreciate y'all.
Like, comment, and subscribe. Let us know if you want us to be back on the show. Like, comment, and subscribe.
They're coming back, whatever you say, audience. So yes, affirm it for me. I want to thank you for coming on. Again, Kyoki, Sharon, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. So much more. I'm going to bring you out to talk about another time. Kurt Casey Clayton, thank you for producing the show. Thank you for the theme music. Thank you for being my other half. Now you can listen to the show at your leisure by following Traveler's Guide to Venus and Mars with Princess Robin on 8 major podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Anchor, and Spotify. Subscribe, support, and share your comments with us. Remember to follow us on social media. On Facebook, it's Traveler's Guide to Venus and Mars with Princess Robin. On Instagram, it's at just Princess Robin. Thanks for joining us. And remember, regardless of what the roadmap says, you've got to follow your own heart. Until next week, smooches.
You have to follow your own heart.
Follow it.